why Adam and Eve are important. I think you laid out a pretty good case for why you can't use natural science today to study what would have been going on prior to the judgment flood and the other judgments and at the time of creation. The second part of this, though, is when we start talking about why Adam and Eve matter.
Yes.
Let's focus for a minute on Eve. You said something to one of the talks that I walked and that I watched, and I talked to Brother Andre Marie about it yesterday, and you've been a guest on Brother's show. You said something about the Immaculate Conception, and Brother and I talked about it briefly yesterday, but I said I want to ask Hugh Owen this question and let him explain this to my audience and to an audience that will go beyond this show, I hope and I pray. And that is that when St. Bernadette Soubirous was visited by the apparition of Our Lady, and she very precisely and insistently proclaimed that she was the Immaculate Conception, that ties back to our Adam and Eve story. How?
Yes. This is something that St. Maximilian Kolbe meditated on most of his life. And the last thing that he wrote before he was taken to the starvation bunker at Auschwitz concentration camp was on this theme. And what he realized through years of prayerful meditation, not in his office in front of his computer, but on his knees in front of the Blessed Sacrament, was that with this statement, I am the Immaculate Conception, in 1858, on the very eve of the publication of Darwin's Origin of Species in 1859, our Blessed Mother gave the lie to the diabolical deception of human evolution. And this is how he explains it. He says, Adam was not conceived in the womb of a parent. He was created body and soul. He goes on. Eve was not conceived in the womb of a mother. She was created literally from Adam's side, body and soul. He continues, our Lord Jesus Christ did not begin to exist in the womb of the Blessed Virgin Mary. He's God. He existed from eternity. Therefore, St. Maximilian says, the Blessed Virgin Mary is the one and only unique Immaculate Conception. But here's the thing. If theistic evolution is true, what's being taught in most Catholic schools, universities, and seminaries all over the world today, then Adam and Eve were conceived in the womb of a subhuman primate. And since even theistic evolutionists are bound to accept the dogma of original sin, they have to hold that Adam and Eve were conceived without sin. And therefore, if Darwin's hypothesis were correct, then the Blessed Virgin would have had to say, I am an Immaculate Conception, or I am Immaculate Conception number 3. Mm-hmm. But she didn't say that. She said, I am the Immaculate Conception, and thereby she gave the lie to the diabolical deception of human evolution. But let me speak about why it matters from a different point of view, if I could.
Absolutely.
You see, the enemies of God and of the Holy Church have always wanted to destroy the foundations of Catholic civilization by attacking the institution of holy marriage. And if we turn back the clock to the late 19th century, the first thing that these people wanted to do was to introduce legal divorce into Catholic countries like Italy, where it was prohibited by law. Now, the Pope in 1880 was Pope Leo XIII, and he saw exactly what the Freemasons and the socialists and their allies were trying to do, and he wrote an entire encyclical on holy marriage, Arcanum Divinae. And in that encyclical, he tells the bishops of the whole world, you must defend holy marriage on this foundation. And then he writes these words. He says, we recall what is known to all and cannot be denied by anyone that God on the sixth day of creation, having formed man from the slime of the earth and having breathed into his face the breath of life, gave him a companion, Eve, whom he miraculously drew from the side of Adam when he was locked in sleep. And he goes on to say, this is the basis for the Catholic teaching on the unity and permanence of the marital union. So he's saying to the bishops, you must teach that God created one man, body and soul, for one woman whom he created from the body of the man, one man for one woman for life from the beginning of creation. And think about it. If every bishop, if every pastor, if every teacher, if every parent in the whole Catholic community were teaching this to our children, would they be confused?
No.
Would there be any confusion about the law of the church in regard to marriage or contraception or any of the teaching of the church on sexual morality? No, there wouldn't be. But we know that poll after poll shows that the vast majority of our young people are totally confused. They think that it's okay to fornicate before marriage. They think that it's all right for two men to be married or for two women to be married. In Ireland, when they had the referendum on unnatural marriage, to put it on the same footing as natural marriage, 95% of the young adult voters voted to make unnatural unions on the same footing with the same dignity as natural marriage. And that has to be understood in the right way. That's 95%. Those people, virtually 100% of them, were baptized Catholics who had made their first Holy Communion and received some kind of catechesis in a CCD program or a Catholic school. They're the ones who got that abomination enacted into law. And why? Because virtually every single one of them was taught that Genesis is a myth and science has enlightened us to understand that we actually evolved from subhuman primates, and that it's the scientists who tell us which parts of the Bible we can accept as written and which parts we have to understand in an allegorical way. That's what happened, and that's what's happening in this country and throughout the Western world.
And can't be allowed to continue. Can I add a little something here, Hugh?
Please.
So when the priest in the movies, and this is supposed to be part of the rite, I believe, when the priest in the movies during the wedding ceremony or during the wedding rite says, and what God has joined together, let no man cast asunder, he's referring to Adam and Eve as the basis for that, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
So when someone says, well, you guys just met, you know, marriage was introduced after the Christian age began. It wasn't really, didn't really exist in the old Jewish rite, not the way it exists today. And that this is not something that goes all the way back. And it's always been open to definition and this and that and the other. Post-Noachic flood, we know that most of the world was recolonized by the sons of Japheth. There's a priest of the Order of Fraternal Society of St. Peter who gives a series of homilies on this, and I'm trying to think of the scholar that he references, but there's been serious anthropological work done to say that about three-quarters of the world's population can trace its lineage back to Japheth as the founding patriarch. He even says that the Chinese, in their iconography, which is what I want to talk about next, in Chinese iconography, they have a story about the flood, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. The Chinese character for a flood in the most ancient form, which exists from about 4,000 years ago, inscribed on bone, is a symbol for a human, which is a mouth, the number 8, and the symbol for a vessel. Now, is it a coincidence that the word in the most ancient form of Chinese for a flood consists of the symbol for 8 people in a vessel? It seems very unlikely that that's just a coincidence.
And so then if you talk about extrapolating, when we use modern science and genealogical tables in science to extrapolate and to go backwards in family trees, you ultimately, as I said, about three-quarters of the Earth's population just trace back to Japheth. And the names are all there. The Greeks trace their lineage back, all the way back to what they say is a common male ancestor. They call him the god Jupiter. Well, Jupiter in Greek is a conjugation of what? Japheth. So, folks, there's science to this. That's just biblical and that's just the... No, there's actual archaeology anthropology, and geology all say that there was a flood, and if there was a flood, then that's in the book of Genesis, then why don't you believe the rest of it? Okay, now I have a, I want to pivot now. One of the things that you present in your presentations about why Adam and Eve matter, and you go into a lot of detail about this, and this is very important to get, is about, I mentioned it a moment ago, is about iconography. Now, when we think of iconography, you think, well, you mean like icons on my computer? Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be icons on your computer, but yeah, symbology, art, we would look at it today and go like, okay, that's artwork. No, it's iconography. And iconography is used to show, to tell a story or to give instructions on something. And it's anyone that can look at something that is a piece of iconography, Hugh, can look at it and go like, oh, okay, well, that's a god creating something, or that's a guy with a halo shooting a beam of light out of his eyes at some guy just lying on the ground. No, that's actual creation. Can you talk for a minute about iconography and how we know that the creation story was told all throughout the throughout all the ages of which we have history for, and that that iconography, some of it still exists today?
Certainly. First, I'd just like to clarify one thing very quickly. Jupiter's the Latin name or the Roman name for the king of the gods, so Zeus would be the Greek equivalent, but it's definitely true, as you said, that we can trace Jupiter back to Japheth. And what's happened in a lot of the mythology of the Greeks and Romans is that they took these ancestors and they deified them, which is why these gods behave like corrupt human beings, because originally they were human beings that, that got exalted into this deified status. But one other thing I'd like to point out very quickly is that I don't know exactly what percentage of people on Earth could be traced back to Japheth versus Ham or Shem, so I can't speak to that point. But one thing that is, I think, important for the listening audience to understand is that scientists, historians, have been able to record population growth for the last several hundred years, and that's empirical data. Now, the average rate of population growth is about half of 1% per year, and if we go back to the time of the flood, which is about 4,500 years ago, according to the Hebrew text of the Bible, and if we start with a population of 8, and we do the arithmetic, and we have 0.5% of population growth every year up until the year 2000, we end up with a population of about 6.5 billion people, which is just about right on the money. But if you look in a typical evolutionary biology textbook or biology textbook that is teaching this evolutionary mythology, they will tell